Big Blue Insider is on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com. Get on the show. Call 280-CATS. That's 280-2287. Or toll free at 1-800-606-GAME. That's 1-800-606-4263. Big Blue Insider is brought to you by UK Healthcare. Now, here's Dick Gabriel.
Welcome to the Big Blue Insider. Dick Gabriel, Curtis Birch. On a gorgeous afternoon. We've been lucky with the weather. That's going to go away. It's going to get rainy. But that's all right. We are here for you at 280-2287, 800-606-4263. You can tweet us at BigBlueInsider1. Coming up tonight, we are going to talk about football recruiting. And our friend from the Courier-Journal, John Hale, has written an interesting article updating the efforts by the Kentucky coaches. But in working on that story, he actually uncovered a little bit of a theme in the city of Louisville, especially with some of the youngsters who play at my alma mater, Trinity High School. Not a lot of interest right now in U of L, which is really a fascinating development given the fact that U of L had a pretty good year last year. Not a great year, could have been great, but they staggered down the stretch to the Cardinals. But Petrino, his kid went to school there, his kid quarterback Trinity to a state championship. He's always had a good relationship with that school. But for whatever reason right now, there's not a lot of love for some of the recruits in Louisville toward U of L, more so toward UK. So we'll talk about that tonight.
Could it be said that this story has sham-rocked the recruiting world in Louisville?
It could be said by you and only you, and we'll leave it at that. You're proud of that, aren't you? Have you been sitting on that all afternoon?
Just came. I was going to make a silly, like, luck of the, it's not, but they're an Irish joke about something about a pot of gold at the end of a rainbow, but they're not really, you know, Irish. It's the shamrock, so.
No, we go by Irish. That's sort of a subtitle, yeah. But, no, what you came up with is, and I use this term loosely, better. So we appreciate your effort for that. We're going to hear from SEC coaches. We talked about it a little bit last night, but we saved the sound bites for tonight. Talking about the one and done, what it's done for Kentucky, what it's done for and to college basketball, and changes they would like to see made, perhaps becoming a two and done, sort of becoming more like the baseball rule, that sort of thing. Cameron Mills will join us in hour number two to talk about that, as well as I wanted to drag Cameron in here and ask him about his show that he did the other night. If you haven't heard it, you can go to his website and listen to it. I had Rex Chapman on. Rex recently writing a piece for Sports Illustrated talking about his addiction to painkillers, to opioids. It's a massive problem in the United States, particularly in the state of Kentucky. And Cameron admitted that at one point, dealing with a terrible back injury, he had a problem. And look, he and I have been close friends for a long time. I had no idea. I knew he had back issues. I had no idea. So anyhow, I'm going to ask him about that as well. And we'll get his take on this potential change to the baseball rule in the NBA. And I always say this is, jokingly, an NBA free zone. Well, it's not. It's been a LeVar Ball free zone. We've talked NBA. Curtis is a big NBA fan. And I like to track the former Wildcats, as do a lot of you in the NBA. Well, this just got a lot more complicated, didn't it? This is a true blockbuster trade. You might not have heard this. And if you're not an NBA fan, I get it. But if you're a Kentucky basketball fan, you're going to be interested in this. And if I may, you need to pay attention to these trades because more and more Wildcats are playing in the league, and that means there's a distinct possibility that they will be affected. I don't mean directly by these trades, but indirectly. And that's exactly when ultimately they end up affected directly. That's what happened with the Chris Paul deal. Curtis, how good is Chris Paul? You pay attention to the NBA. This is the golden age of point guards. Where do you put him?
Probably the top if you don't put Steph Curry as a true point guard.
Okay. You're talking about a guy, ball handler, distributor.
And he is. I mean, and I'm
going
to.
Runs the team.
Over the
classic
past,
point guard,
yeah,
right?
The past 5 years, he's probably at the top of the list. He is over 30. I think he's 32 now. So.
Oh, he's an old man.
His decline might be started, but I mean he's a great player. He's on the All-Star team every year. He's an All-NBA player, so he's I mean, he's a top. He's an all-star. He's a star in the league.
And when he left New Orleans, this was the thing. When they traded, or rather, they draft Anthony Davis, right, in 2012. Well, the year prior, New Orleans traded Paul to the Clippers. So when they drafted Anthony Davis, one of the reactions was, oh, if they only had Chris Paul to get him the basketball. Since he went to L.A., Chris Paul has made the All-NBA first team three times, mm-hmm. second team twice, All-Defense six times, 18.5 points, nearly 10 assists, 2.5 steals over the six seasons. That is a solid career. But he became unhappy in L.A. with the Clippers, and I'll get back to that in a moment. And he told them, I'm out of here. I'm going to play out my option, and I'm going to get out of here. So they wisely said, we have got to trade him so we can get something for this guy before he leaves. And that's exactly what they did.
They got a lot.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. They got too much.
Yeah, that's probably going to...
They got too much.
You talked about it impacting Kentucky guys. Yeah. That's probably why it's going to impact them so much. So
You're going to recognize most of the names.
Yeah, the headliners...
If you're a UK fan.
The headliners for the trade was Chris Paul for Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, Sam Decker, and Montrezl Harrell. Also included were DeAndre Liggins and Kyle Wilcher. Now, you might be a little bit confused because DeAndre Liggins was on the Cavs for most of last season, and then they basically cut him to add Darren Williams. How'd that work out for him? And he got picked up very late by the Dallas Mavericks.
Right.
Well, the Mavericks and the Rockets traded for Liggins. Liggins went to the Rockets in exchange for cash.
Right.
And then immediately Liggins was sent as part of this deal. I'm not a NBA financial expert, but the
You're way not a capologist.
Yeah, that's a great word. Someone should trademark that. this has to be money because Chris Paul is a max guy, and all these guys are wild players. You know, all of them, most of these guys, Decker, Lou Williams, Beverly was, I believe, he was on one of the second or third all defensive team this year.
He was.
So these are really good players, but they don't make as much when you add them up to Chris Paul. So they had to have a bunch of these guys in the deal to make the numbers work. At least that's the way I read it. I'm kind of guessing that unless they just show out really well, Wilcher and Liggins will probably never play for the Clippers.
Yeah.
Because both of their contracts are non-guaranteed. So that means that if you release them, you don't take a hit in a financial sense. So they're going to have to show up and play for the Clippers as best they can to make the team, or they're going to be looking for a team again, a new team again.
Right.
I do wonder, like, does DeAndre Liggins get Rockets gear?
I would hope.
They would have, that would be smart, though, if they just send him a jersey. I mean, he was probably literally a member of the Rockets for at most hours, at least maybe minutes.
However long it took them to add his name to the deal.
So,
but I would think stuff like this I find interesting. Sam Decker, you might recall, played on the Wisconsin team that spoiled everything in 2015. And Sam Decker, according to some, believe that Decker was the reason that John Calipari left the Harrison Twins in the ball game at the most crucial point, which is, of course, the three straight trips down the court when the Wildcats couldn't even get a shot off. And a lot of us were thinking, why isn't either Booker or Ulis in the game? Some people believe both should have been in there. I don't necessarily say that, but there are those who say that Decker, who was a big guard and a really good shooter, in fact, hit a clutch three-pointer in that game, that Decker was the reason he had to leave, some say both Harrisons on the floor, for defensive reasons. So, at any rate, he was part of the Wisconsin team that ruined the Final Four for all of college basketball, which I think would have loved to have seen the undefeated season, especially if it meant beating Duke. How's that sound, Curtis?
Sounds,
that make sense to you?
Yeah, it sounds good, but I just am curious as to if what Kentucky fans think of this trade overall.
Well, let me get to the rest of it.
I was going to put it in a hypothetical standpoint. if you're looking at it and all these guys ended up with the Clippers, you would have two former Cats, even though Wiltshire transferred, and then kind of these two villains with Montrezl Harrell and Sam Decker.
Well, I was going to get to that. You also had Patrick Beverley. Where did he play his college ball?
I have no idea.
Arkansas, wasn't he?
Probably, but that was a little bit before my time.
Okay. I could be wrong about that. I'll look it up. Yes, DeAndre Liggins. Lou Williams, I know nothing about. He did not play college ball. As Curtis mentioned, Montrezl Harrell of U of L and Kyle Wiltshire. So the connections, either directly or indirectly, to UK, it's just really interesting. It's getting deeper and deeper. Yes, indeed, I'm right about Patrick Beverley. Good shooter in college, has become, as Curtis said, has become known as a tremendous defender in the NBA. So there are so many links to UK basketball now, of course, and there were going to be anyway. I mean, you know, you're going to have guys who played against Kentucky. That's always the case. But as we said, two former Wildcats, but guys who have been, I don't know if Wiltshire's ever been all the way up. Liggins has.
Wiltshire has.
And has he? Did he
get
up?
Yeah, he got some run.
All right. So if I'm hearing you right, you're a little disappointed and surprised. I really thought Liggins, once he put his personal problems behind him, I really thought Liggins would hang on in the NBA. He's a 3-and-D guy. He can hit the three-pointer, and he can guard in the backcourt. And Keith Bogans made a very nice living at that. And I see Liggins as a similar player, but it just depends, as Curtis said, on contracts and perceived, the perception of need and things like that. So, but this is a heck of a blockbuster trade, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to, I mean, who knows what this is going to lead to, but it makes the Houston Rockets very interesting.
Yep.
I don't know if it equals a lot of wins, but they're going to be interesting because you got two guys that are really, really good. I think Liggins, to your point, will catch on just because he has such a skill set that is now so valuable guarding these guards.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, whenever he's trying to get these shooters and everything, you need a guy like DeAndre Liggins to be out there on the court. I did see something fantastic today on the internet. It was from the Portland Trailblazers Twitter account, and they sent out a picture, and it was a press conference format. Of course, Photoshopped. And I had the mic set up, and it said, "We would like to welcome a new member of our team." And the picture is a bag of money sitting in front of a microphone. And it said, "We would like to introduce cash considerations. We are thrilled for him to be joining our team this year."
That's great. You know, what's interesting about the Rockets is for the longest time, there was at least one Wildcat, it seemed like, on the Rockets. You had Chuck Hayes down there for quite a while. Patrick Patterson down there for quite a while. Seemed like they both went to Toronto at virtually the same time. They didn't, but it seemed that way. Terrence Jones was down there and did extremely well for a while, but contracts being what they are, he moved on. So for a while, they're the Rockets. They aren't quite Phoenix when it comes to corralling Kentucky players. But I guess that's a team we'll keep an eye on, Curtis, but we don't really have to much anymore, do we?
No, not particularly.
Are they dead to us?
Not from a Kentucky.
Are the Rockets dead to us?
No, I don't think they're dead to us. I mean, were you that big a fan of Kyle Wiltshire? You wanted him to see him in a Rockets jersey?
I'd like to see somebody. Why not?
You sound like John Short. Why not a Kentucky player on every team?
Well, is there a good reason?
There's some bad GMs in the league.
Well, that's true.
Even though there's one less today.
See, I can't argue with that.
There's one less bad GM in the NBA.
That's because Phil Jackson got resigned. That would have been blockbuster headline enough. If it weren't for this trade, Twitter would be a Twitter about Phil Jackson, but his reign in New York is over. And it did not work. Somebody did the math. What did he get paid? $60 million over 3 years? He got paid $50,000 a day. A day for being a GM. Being a bad GM.
That's a good gig if you can get it.
You think? Wow. When we come back, we'll look at a story written by John Hale about football recruiting in the city of Louisville. It's trending upward for Mark Stoops. Not so much for Bobby Petrino. We're back in a minute here in 630 WLAP. By the way, speaking of Phil Jackson and the Knicks, our pal Mike Sofosnik, the New York City police officer, who is a huge UK fan and has a great podcast of his own. He tweeted this earlier today. The Knicks and Phil Jackson are parting ways. Solid job. He takes a shot at the owner. Solid job, Dolan, allowing him to pass on Monk before you got rid of him. Good riddance, Phil. And another commentator said that he believes Phil Jackson will go down in history as the worst executive in the history of the NBA.
And That's a stretch.
One of his final decisions was to not draft Malik Monk. So it'll be up to Malik Monk to help add to that legacy, if you will.
Well, there was a couple other teams that passed between the two, though. So.
Well, but it made sense for everybody else to pass on him.
Did it, though?
But not – I mean, it looked like he fit the Knicks' need. I mean, everybody knew that the teams drafting after the Knicks didn't need Malik Monk. But it seemed like that was the need there. I don't know. I don't follow the Knicks enough. The Knicks need everything. No question about that. Mentioned John Hale. He's going to join us tomorrow night. He's enjoying a Reds game tonight. But he has a piece – online right now, CourierJournal.com. I assume it'll be in the newspaper tomorrow. Basically saying, why did Trinity High School, the headline, why did Trinity High School football stars not consider Louisville? And it's really a bit of an eye-opener. In fact, two of the city's top football prospects come from Trinity. Happens to be my alma mater. Could have been any school, though. And they are not apparently interested and going to U of L. And one of the guys quoted is a man named Chris Vaughn, who played at U of L and now runs Aspirations Fitness, where many of the top high school football players in the city are training. And he says the experience not being recruited much by U of L has just kind of, but I'm quoting now, left a bad taste in some of my kids' mouths just in how they were recruited by Louisville staff. And evidently, this changed, Curtis, when Grantham left as the defensive coordinator after that 1 year. So that had a lot to do with it. Wide receiver Rondale Moore, state's number one prospect in 2018, did not have U of L in his top six list, which includes UK, Texas, Pittsburgh, Purdue, Ohio State, and Penn State. And then they've got a D-end who's a junior, top prospect in 2019, looking at UK and a lot of other schools, including Texas and Alabama, but not U of L. Jarius Brents, four-star recruit, best prospect in the state in 2018, according to Rivals, will release his own top 10 list soon, likely with Kentucky on it. And Vaughn said, I think they're doing a good job. I think they're coming around and showing their face. And he said U of L, there's just a lack of recruiting attention from U of L coaches. I find that really fascinating.
I'm just worried. I mean, is the NCAA going to come knocking on my door about Dick Gabriel's involvement in the Trinity recruiting?
Let him.
I mean, you don't actively recruit Trinity players to Kentucky?
I do not.
I thought, and let me put it like this. If I went to Trinity High School and I was like, man, where am I going to go to college? And then you're thinking and thinking, you're like, you know what? I would be able to do some post-game interviews with our most famous and best alumnus, Dick Gabriel, after winning some UK football games. That would seal the deal for me.
Well, best, I don't know. I'm not the most famous. Best, well, you know, I mean, it's a relative term. No. I just think it's you know, it wasn't exactly a pipeline because there were Trinity kids who came to UK, but it was always a struggle. And you and I, but we spent a lot of time, we spent hours on this show talking about the fact that kids now are sort of being recruited in bunches, and kids are recruiting other kids.
Mm-hmm.
If one comes, hey, come be a part of this.
I mean, it's kind of, and this is a weird example to use, but it's like the Steph Curry shoe. As soon as it became uncool, it was uncool, and that was it.
Yeah.
So I mean, if the University of Louisville recruiting tactics get a bad name in Trinity High School, just like any other kind of rumor in high school, it's going to make its way through the whole high school, and it's going to kind of become fact, even though it might not be 100% true.
Yeah.
So you got to deal with that.
The kid from Wagner, the D-back, said that he did get an offer last summer, but said the interest dropped off after Todd Grantham left for Mississippi State. Remember, they swapped D coordinators, basically? And he said, I feel like Louisville right now is very focused on these Florida boys and these Southern dudes, and they are not really even giving in-state a look unless you're a top dog that could come back to haunt them. When we come back, we'll talk about the baseball recruiting rule. Will it be applied to college basketball? That and more coming up, 630 WLAP.
You got mud on your face, you big disgrace, kicking your can all over the place, singing, we will rock you.
You could pretty much play this every night, couldn't you?
I was just curious if Trinity plays this after they shamrock somebody.
I don't think I've ever heard. They probably do. You know,
well, you had to in the 90s. It was a high school athletic rule.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you had jock jams, absolutely. And this was on that, and you played them all.
That and when you had a team down and beaten, it was like. In the 90s, did they play, hey, goodbye?
Yeah,
because
that's...
I've heard that more and more again.
I think that's...
That went away for a while.
That started up around that time.
Oh, it started up a long time ago. Trust me on that. Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. Dick Gabriel, Curtis Birch. One other note on that Clippers trade I failed to mention was that in the ESPN story that I read, and yes, they still have printed words on their website, there was... information about the fact that Chris Paul was not happy about the direction of the Clippers since Doc Rivers brought his own son on board, Austin Rivers. That reported by ESPN anchor Michael Eaves, who used to be on the Clippers TV network and used to be a reporter, producer, anchor at WKYT. So another UK link. They're everywhere, Curtis. Everywhere.
Unavoidable at this point.
That's
in the
right.
NBA.
That's exactly
in
right.
In a good way.
In a good way. SEC coaches, for the most part, the ones who spoke up on the teleconference are in favor of changes in the way the NBA, they would like to see a change in the way the NBA administers its rules. Right now, as we all know, I think we've all learned by now, that the one-and-done is not a John Calipari rule, is not an NCAA rule, is not a UK rule. It's an NBA, not just an NBA rule, it's a players' union rule. And there seems to be the feeling that that's going to change. Maybe it's because when he wasn't saying stupid things, like the one-and-done's not working for anybody, Adam Silver did imply that he would like to see a change. Well, he didn't imply it, he just flat-out said it, basically.
Can I say something about Adam Silver that shows even though he's reached great heights in his profession, he's still just a normal person? The way I understand it, I think he was like very swayed by the Ben Simmons documentary on Showtime, which I have not seen, but the reports I've heard about it is it put the one and done in a very bad light, and that's where he picked up his thought that they don't go to school the second semester because Ben Simmons didn't. And even though I'm sure he has access to stats as much as anybody.
Thank you.
And all the guys that, you know, go to class the full year, he saw this one story, and it's a lot easier to remember a story than a bunch of stats that were given to you at some point.
It is for idiots like you and me.
Well, that's what I mean.
Don't you think that guy has a little bit more going?
You would imagine, but I'm thinking maybe, you know,
you may be right. And I'm sure that swayed him, and that's good. Because what happened with Ben Simmons stinks.
Yeah.
You're right about that. But he needed to do a little more research.
Yeah.
And you know what? He could turn to someone and say, get me some numbers on this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I'm not.
An office full of interns could have run out and done that for him.
I'm not defending him in any
right.
way. I'm just kind of thinking of how he got this. Because how did he get this so wrong?
That's a great question.
That's the only reason I can come up with. To be honest, because it just isn't true here in Lexington. And if this, it's kind of undisputed. It's the biggest one and done factory in college basketball.
Right.
So
it ain't happening in Durham. As much as you hate
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
as much as you'd like to think it is, it ain't happening in Durham.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so it just, I think that he fell into a trap that a lot of people do when you hear like one story that might not be the case for all of those people in that one instance.
And I'll leave it at this, and you may be right, But we in the media are criticized at times for taking that approach. How can you report this and how can you say this is a fact when it only is true for this right here and not for everything else? And people who do that, I've decried people in our line of work who take the lazy way out. And if they did something like that, I mean, you know, that's they should be called out. So, yeah, do your homework. Get some research. All right. Speaking of the NBA and the colleges, a guy who probably knows the NBA and the college game, at least in the SEC, better than anybody, better than John Calipari, is Avery Johnson. Because Avery Johnson both played for quite a while in the league. Good player and a pretty good coach until his time ran out. And now the head coach at Alabama doesn't know nearly as much, of course, about coaching in college as he does about the NBA. But he was asked about changing perhaps to two and done, but make it like the baseball rule. You can go out of high school, but if you play, you got to play at least 2 years. He said he has mixed feelings about it.
I want to try to do what's best for the player on one hand. And I think there are exceptions like Kobe Bryant and Kevin Garnett and players, LeBron, that can come straight out of high school. But I just don't want a young man that's not his trajectory to not be focused in high school and think that he's a kid that can come straight out of high school and go straight to the NBA. But there, if we can figure out a way to have those kids where there's an exception to the rule, where he's a superior talent, and you know he's got that type of talent that he can go straight from high school to the NBA, let's do it. But then on the other hand, you know, I hope that the kids that do attend college can stay for at least 2 years, maximum three, before they are allowed to go to the NBA.
So put down Avery Johnson for being in favor, in a general sense, of the baseball rule. And Frank Martin of South Carolina, he is too, but he strongly believes, as part of that rule, if you want to go out of high school, go.
I believe if kids want at 16 years of age, they don't want to pursue academic routes. They want to just go play for money. They should. I don't believe that anyone should ever deprive anyone the opportunity to work. That's number one. Number two, no one forces kids to go to college. I'm tired of everyone saying that we're the ones that are making it hard. We don't force, the rule does not force kids to go to college. They can go to the D League, they can go overseas, they can go to prep school, they can go to junior college. No one forces them to come to Division I institutions.
Other coaches referred to that. He flat out said it. I don't know about you, Curtis. I really liked it when he said that. That's a point that needs to be made over and over again.
I mean, sure. But I kind of disagree. What's your best option? As a top high school player, which if you look at...
Of course it's your best option.
Okay, well then if you...
But you're not being forced to go.
Well, you're not being forced to do a lot of things. You're not being forced to go to work every day, but you have to make a paycheck. I mean...
If you don't want to go and do all the things you have to do on the D1 level, then don't. And you're right. That's the point. It is your best option. There's no question about it. But there are other options. It is an option. There's no question about it.
I mean,
you don't have to go to work. The next option is a terrible option.
The next option outside of college basketball is not a really good option if you look at the financials from it. You end up losing money because you're falling the draft a little bit because you either have to go to Europe or go to the D League, and
if you're
no
going
one
to
has
be,
been successful about
you're
that.
You're right. If you're going to be a highly placed NBA player, there's no question about it. But you know as well as I do that the last time I think kids could come out of high school, there were more than 100 who wanted to declare for the NBA draft, and maybe half a dozen were going to make it. Now, is that a good option? Well, some people think it is. Frank Martin did say, though, he does like the baseball rule.
Now, I think the way it works is it should be the way it works in every other professional sports. That's just my opinion. If they choose to go, go. like in baseball. If they choose to go to college, well, like baseball, like women's basketball, like football, they should then, out of respect to what college athletics are all about, they should have to stay out of the draft for 3 years. I don't see why it works in every sport, but in our sport, it's such, you know, such a complicated thing to understand.
One of the other guys who was really outspoken, it was Bruce Pearl, and we got two or three comments from him. And he's kind of all over the map here, and I agree with a lot of stuff that he says, and I disagree with a lot of stuff he says. So you kind of have to pay attention, because like I said, he kind of bounces back and forth, and I think Curtis, you will agree with me that he's wrong on several points. But like John Calipari, you know, he is all about his players.
Right,
but like
right
everybody,
now,
he said they ought to be able to go to college, or they ought to be able, rather, to play right out of high school if they want to.
I think right now, as you look at the one-and-dones, you've got three components of it. One would be, how's it working for the NBA? Two, how's it working for the college game? And three, how's it working for the student-athlete or the athlete? I think it's working great for the NBA. I think they're getting the best out of this because, you know, nobody knew Lonzo Ball from Chino Hills, California, but they all know him from UCLA. And of course, you in Kentucky can, you know, write a, there's a, there, let's say Cal's had 17 lotteries or whatever it is. I mean, you know, you could take any one of them. No, nobody knew Darren Fox was from Texas, or Bam Adebayo from South Carolina, until they had 1 year at Kentucky, and boom, they've got a brand.
Now, if they could go out of high school, Curtis, don't you think that the brand would be there?
Yes, because they would
the
be
the guys you just mentioned.
Yeah, they would be covered completely differently.
Exactly.
And he's
right. Playing in college, they made big names for themselves. They played on national television, no question about it. But the brand would be there.
Yeah,
right?
Because they're going to be a lottery pick.
Yeah.
If you're going to be a lottery,
yeah.
Well, if you are a lottery pick, you have cachet and you're going to get covered.
No question. But again, he's right. Maybe a wider brand, a bigger brand. Yeah, that would have happened. He does go on to say he believes that the college experience, even for 1 year, is underrated.
The basketball training is way better than anybody wants to give it credit for. The social training is more than that. There is a legitimate educational component in two factors. One, these kids are able to come back to their universities after they're done playing and be able to finish their degrees. Watching Bam Adebayo and De'Aaron Fox in tears after they didn't get to the Final Four will tell you those kids are Wildcats for life. Tobias Harris would not trade his 1 year with me at Tennessee. He is a Vol for life, and the impact that had on him. Right now, the way to get to the NBA is through college. If we do anything to lose that, then we're going to jeopardize this component. And that is, last year, the graduation rate in men's basketball for African-American student-athletes was the highest that it's ever been. It has increasingly gotten better and better and better for lots of reasons. The APR, you know, the support that we receive. College is still the way to get to the NBA.
And he's right about that, of course, because you can't go from high school. But even if you could, there would be more kids coming out of from college after 1 or 2 years. I find it interesting, and I think that is uplifting, the number of the African-American kids who are graduating. I find it interesting, Curtis, that other coaches are now drawing upon the video of Fox.
Yeah.
And Adebayo on those kids. But I think that's important, the locker room video.
Yeah, I this whole topic is just so multi-layered. It's
yeah.
Tough to discuss in such a, you know, a short segment. Well, in any segment, I mean, we could have probably a whole week of shows on all the different angles of this. But it kind of seems like Bruce Pearl, and I'm going to take it directly at him, it sounds like he's trying to up his recruiting, and he wants to get to these one-and-done guys. So he's jumping on the side of the argument that will help him. And I know, I mean, that's not, maybe not going to be completely fair, but with his elite recruiting, specifically a guy like Wiley, who is tearing it up and will be a one and a half done probably if he continues on the trajectory he is, because
yeah.
He came to Auburn for half a semester and
right.
will probably go after next year. He seems to kind of, you know, make back and forth arguments, as you mentioned. I don't know.
Listen to the last comment we have from him, because he's kind of all over the place on this next one. When he talks about how going right away could jeopardize the value of going to college.
In 7th and 8th grade, parents are going into those schools making sure their kids are taking Algebra 1 as a freshman, and they're making sure that they are getting qualified. And in many ways, we've helped improve, enhance the educational process through this process. If you now allow the G League to be the way to get to the NBA, which is being discussed as part of doing away with the one-and-dones, that is going to maybe really do damage to the culture that we've created, and that is you got to get your books to get your basketball. And so I'm somewhat concerned. I've got some concern about that. So I'm more concerned about the G League and their ability to take kids and get them the NBA more than I am the baseball rule. I think baseball rule's great. 2 years, terrific. Good enough out of, you know, then fine. But to go right to the G League is a real concern to me, because in baseball, they give those kids million-dollar contracts. And if they don't make it, they're okay. They can come back and pay for their education. In the G League, they give them $75,000 to $100,000. That ain't going to last very long, and we're going to lose that academic component. I don't think the one-and-dones are as broke as what some people think they are.
First of all, baseball kids, a very precious few out of 1,000 who sign pro contracts, including free agent contracts, very precious few get $1 million. So, I mean, I've seen kids go for $3,500. I mean, that's ridiculous. The other thing is, it sounds like he's taking credit, and he's right. Parents are making sure their kids are going to make their grades and be ready for college and all that stuff because they have to go to college. And he keeps saying we. I hope he means – I'm going to give him credit. I hope he means we in the universe of basketball. College coaches are not responsible for that. It's the one-and-done rule. That's what's responsible for that. Now, I know the college coaches encourage that, and I give them full credit for that. They are part of that. But I certainly hope he's not implying that college coaches are the reason kids are coming in better prepared, because that's not the case. That they are a vital part of the component, but that's not it. When he said we, I wondered what he meant.
And I think that it's interesting that he basically completely contradicted Frank Martin, because he was talking about how Frank Martin said we don't force these kids to go to college, and Bruce Pearl said basically we gave them no other options, that now parents have to make their kids go to school and take it seriously.
Well, I don't know if I agree with that, but that's one option. We were talking about options.
Well, you just said that they had to.
No, I said if they want to go to a Division I school, they want to go that traditional route, they've got to make their grades. They don't have to do that if they're going to go to prep school, JUCO, Europe, or the G League. And by the way, he is right about that. Because back in the day, you got to remember, when kids were coming out of high school, there were kids who didn't care about graduating high school. Doesn't matter, I'm going to be a pro basketball player. And that was that. We're up against the break. Back in a minute, 6:30, WLAP. Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. We went really long, so not a whole lot of time to chat right here. Hour number two, Cameron Mills joins to talk about some of these same issues. Let me ask you, Mr. Birch, if they go to the baseball rule, look into your crystal ball, your big blue crystal ball, what happens to UK basketball? What does UK basketball look like if, let's say, in 2 years they go to the two and done, or and you can play high school out of high school? What does UK basketball look like 5 years from now, assuming Calipari's still here?
From like
even if he's not
a top five program,
still,
yes, I think Kentucky's established that. I mean, there's always exceptions, and there was one right before Calipari, but for the most part,
I don't remember that.
But for the most part, if you have a competent coach in the chair at Kentucky, they're going to be successful, they're going to go to Final Fours, and Kentucky's going to be one of the best programs in the nation,
which it was before all this started. And the question is, if Calipari is here, How does he change the way he does business? I think that's a really fascinating question. And as Curtis said, maybe we'll do that. It's the summertime. We've got plenty of time to talk about it. Coming up, as I said, Cameron Mills. By the way, tomorrow night, Mitch Barnhart will join us. Kyle Tucker, we've reestablished with him finally. And John Hale will come on to talk about the recruiting story that he broke today. Hour number two is next, 6:30, WLAP.
Thank you for listening to Big Blue Insider. I'm Curtis Birch. You can follow me on Twitter at Curtis Birch, B-U-R-C-H. Be sure to follow at Big Blue Insider 1. Like the Facebook page, just search Big Blue Insider and check out our website, BigBlueInsider.com. Also, subscribe on iTunes and give us a rating. Thanks again for listening.
Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. Dick Gabriel with you on a Wednesday edition of our program, hour number two. And joined in the studio now by a gentleman who was in our studio, this studio, last Sunday. He'll be back this Sunday. It is the one and only Cameron Mills.
Hello, sir.
Of the Cameron Mills Show. And I wanted to drag Cameron in off the street to ask him a little bit about what we heard in hour number one, and that is the SEC coaches and their thoughts about the one and done and things like that. I know you're not a big NBA guy at all. Or are you?
Sarcasm? I loved it.
Oh, that's right. You don't watch much college basketball.
Yeah, I'd rather watch NBA than college.
You watch your beloved Wildcats, but you would rather watch the NBA. So that's good. That'll work out well. I presume you know who these SEC coaches are.
I know who are coaches in the SEC.
Yeah.
I don't particularly know what they've said regarding the one-and-done rule.
All right. Well, I will refresh your memory from the comments we played in hour number one.
Okay, good.
Yeah, they're all pretty much say the same thing. But the first thing I wanted to talk to you about was the program you did Sunday night with Rex Chapman, former Wildcat, been on our show, NBA radio, recently wrote a piece for Sports Illustrated about his addiction. And obviously that was a shock when the story broke about Rex being charged with a crime, mm-hmm. and this was all tied to his drug use. And I had a chance to talk to Rex not long after that happened, and he told me the story about how an appendectomy led to painkillers, et cetera, and his life just went into a downward spiral. You chose to talk about a problem you had. You chose to talk about it for the very first time. I've known you pretty well now for quite a long time. We've been friends for a long time. Not immediately after you stopped playing ball, but shortly thereafter.
Right.
And we've talked about a lot of stuff on and off the air. You never shared that with me, and I'm not obviously blaming you at all, but why did you know, you told him and not
right,
me.
Right, that's what was in my head.
But no, but tell me why. I mean, there's some symmetry to this, obviously.
Yes.
But why you chose to share that with everybody the other night?
Well, I kind of had it in my head that my story was this, is that very similar to Rex, I herniated two discs. So surgery is what led me down the road I went down.
Yep.
So, or eventually a surgery.
Let me interrupt you real quickly.
Yeah.
I won't do it much. When you herniated a disc, yeah. and I've been there.
Yeah.
You know, I've ruptured fully a disc.
Yeah.
It is so painful.
It is.
But did what you were using come after the surgery, or did it help you manage the pain before?
So here's what's interesting. So I don't know if it's interesting, but this is what happened. I had pain right on my in my right hand, right leg, right in four very specific places.
Yep,
my right buttock, okay, behind my right knee, above the calf, behind my right knee, below the calf, and then in the bottom of my right foot over up on the front pad. Those very four very very specific places.
Sure,
in my rear end was where it was the worst, and I could not sleep in any position other than on my belly. Could not sit in any position whatsoever.
Right.
So immediately I fixed the driving and everything. And it kept getting worse and worse. And so I went to see a doctor, did an MRI. And the odd thing was he told me, he said, well, yeah, I see two herniations here. It definitely looks like it's laying on your disc. But he said, I don't think this is what's causing your pain. And that was always weird to me because I'd gone to WebMD or whatever and looked up and
You're an expert.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but this is, according to the internet,
right,
which we know we can always trust, this is exactly the pain I would be having if I had a herniation at these particular two discs, which was L4, L5, L5, mm-hmm. S1. Long story short, he didn't want to do surgery, which on some level I appreciated. Let's not immediately cut you. Let's see if we can deal with your pain through physical therapy. In the meantime, while I was doing that, he gave me a script, I think, for Percocet. And so that, for a year, I was on Percocet, and then we also did some cortisone injections, I think, in my spine to help block the pain. Was told I'd get 2 weeks of pain-freeness out of that, but those weren't solutions. Those were hopefully therapy would fix it. Bottom line is, a year later, I'm on the Percocets, taking more than I should at that point, because it's just how it happens. You hear some crazy stuff. I think Rex even said the other night, he was taking like, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, I don't want to get it wrong, but he was taking what sounded like, and probably to people who've never been on this stuff, an obscene amount.
Well, I've heard him describe.
Okay, of, yeah. Of per day.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, he said, I took this many of this pill, and then 10 of these, which was OxyContin, I think the heaviest stuff. I was taking more than I should, and I said, I've got to get off this. In the meantime, I went back to the doctor and said, look, I'm still in pain. I've got to get off the medicine. And I, for a week, I quit cold turkey. It was one of the worst weeks of my life.
Not bad.
And that's really the thing that I wanted a lot of people to know on the show, was that when you hear Rex's story and you hear Daryl McCoy's story, who called in, who's a friend of mine for a year, and he told me, just because Rex was coming on, he told me, he said, I want to broadcast, he lives in Southeast Kentucky, that Rex is going to be, I want people to listen, because obviously we've got a big problem with this issue down there. And he said, in a text, he said, Cameron, I struggled with this for 17 years. So I said, you want to come on and talk about it? He said, I never have. And I said, well, I think I'm going to talk about my issue for the first time. So anyway, but Daryl's thing was that, well, let me get back to this. So bottom line is, the doctor didn't want to do surgery. A year later, I'm getting off. He did, or he would. So we did surgery. And then after surgery was about 50% successful. I still had some residual pain, same places. It was still affecting me. So he sent me to a pain doctor. Pain doctor, among other things, she didn't just give me scripts, but among other things, gave me a script for what she said was the smallest of the opiates, something called tramadol. Now, whether it is or isn't is of no, never mind, but she said, I'll help you get off it, because I told her about my situation with Percocet. I didn't like it. So for 2 to 3 years, and I've got the dates. I don't have the dates exactly right, because I haven't really gone back and thought of it a lot, but for 2 to 3 years, I was on this medicine, which, though it might have been one of the minor ones, it helped me more than anything else I'd been on. But eventually, as happens with all this stuff, to get the same amount of pain-freeness, is that a phrase?
Relief.
Thank you. You have to eventually start taking more.
Yep.
Because your body builds up a dependence.
That's right.
And then you get up to eventually those obscene numbers. And basically what's happening to me is, I was going through a 30-day supply or 30-day script from my doctor in half that time.
Mm.
And so the next 15 days, I was just miserable. Again, worst feeling in your life. You feel like you've got the flu. And if it wasn't for, and even though I knew I had a problem, I kept going back and getting the next script. I couldn't wait for it, because it meant pain-freeness, and then it meant I didn't feel sick.
Yep.
And
now the sickness, you believe, was your body telling you, I need these chemicals.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know what
it wasn't about. It wasn't related to the herniated discs.
No, perhaps. Well, because I don't know, honestly. I cannot tell you.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was. I can tell you this. Was there a part of it that, yes, when I took this medicine, I felt this euphoria. I felt good. But I don't want to minimize that and not share my weakness of, oh, yeah, I want to feel good. But I'll tell you this, and this is the thing that I learned about.
It's not good. It's just normal.
Well, see, that's the thing. But there is a level of good. But here's the thing, is that, yes, when you are going through withdrawals of this stuff, or you are getting off of it, or you have run out, whatever your situation is, in order to feel normal, you have to have it. The makeup of this medicine is, you have to have it. And that's when I went through this, I started all of a sudden, now I've got sympathy for these people that are on it. For whatever reason, whether they went and got it off the street or a doctor gave them a script, I got it at that point. Oh, they're not really after their next high. They're after normalcy.
Yeah.
And that gave me a lot. So anyway, because of my parents, I give a lot of credit to my faith. And I said this on my show the other day, that I had to decide, because I wasn't myself. I wasn't being me, and I was a slave to something else. And the Bible's pretty specific about that, you know, that no man can serve two masters, and this was my master.
Yeah.
It was all I thought about. Getting the script, taking the pills, I mean, it was all I thought about. And if it weren't for my mom and dad and my doctor, and I will give a lot of credit to her, because she started seeing signs, and she basically said, we got to get off it.
Was this the pain doctor?
Yes. Right. Yeah, because she was, you know, but... Long story short, because I had mom and dad around, because I had family around, because I had a doctor that was, you know, involved in me, in my care, I eventually was able to, you know, within probably 3 months, was able to get off them completely and get back to what I would consider normal life. And here's the weird thing, and I don't know if it's psychosomatic or what, but when I got off the medicine, guess what disappeared? All my pain.
Wow, really?
I remember after surgery, I had like, there was like some residual pain, and that was real because I wasn't on anything immediately. Right. I guess I was because they gave me something I'm sure under. But anyway, so I started taking this medicine, and my pain was, it was always there, and it was always very real. But when I got off the medicine, the pain, I don't know if it was immediate, but the pain has slowly over the years subsided. And
yeah, because I remember you having back issues.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know it was that bad.
You know what? I would have to, I was traveling a lot on airliners then. Yeah, I mean, I was flying a lot.
That's the worst.
I'd stand up in the middle of the flight.
Sure. Yeah.
And that would just make everyone nervous. It made me uncomfortable because I was making everyone else uncomfortable. Because like, why won't this guy sit down?
Yeah.
You know, it was just that kind of thing. I couldn't sit down and drive. I mean, it was horrible, but I will say this, and coming off of it and this stuff ruling your life was worse. So I knew at some point I needed to share that. At least I felt like I did, because I didn't go to I didn't go to any meetings. I didn't go through rehab. I didn't go through therapy. But I just felt like at some point I need to share. And I think part of the reason was because of what Daryl shared, which is he gave credit to Rex Chapman for him deciding to get clean. And I thought, you know what? It's embarrassing for me to admit this. I don't want to admit this publicly. Obviously, I'd never told you. There were few people in my life who knew how much this affected my life.
And your parents' role was telling you that you were acting differently?
Mom and Dad, a couple things. Number one, yes, that there's something going on with you. You're not you. Okay. Then they also, when my doctor gave me, she wanted to titrate me off the medicine, which is the safe way to do it.
Titrate?
Yes.
Which never knew that
I
word.
Think I'm using it correctly, okay. But you know, I'm prone to make up words, but I think this one is accurate. Effectively, you take, all right, Cameron, what's your usual dose? Four pills a day? Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to take four pills a day for a week. Then we're going to take three and a half for a week. Or, you know, it was then three. I think it was three a day for a week, then two a day for a week. And then eventually your body's not craving it, but you do it safely and controlled over time. My parents' role in that was when I got the next script that I was going to titrate off of, they got the pills. I had no control over them because I couldn't be trusted to take them correctly.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I had that, which was a big, but I needed to share this at some point. And I think my motivation was, part of it was, this will be good for you, me. And then part of it was, maybe my story is different than Rex's.
Yeah.
Everyone's got a different story.
Right.
I mean, that's, we all do. And it's different than Daryl's. But it could have easily have been their stories. I just felt like, let's share it and maybe someone will get some help from it. But I'll tell you, I'd never shared it before. I didn't know what I was going to say. I knew I was going to say something on the air the other night, but I didn't know what was going to come out exactly. And I think that was scary too. Cause I wanted to say the right things. I wanted to be honest. And I wanted someone to get some help from it.
What did you think of the piece that Rex wrote for Sports Illustrated?
A lot of what
Please
Rex...
Please tell me you read that. You're not a
Yes, no, I don't. No, I did. I did. Listen, of all the shows that I've done, this one I did the most prep work for, personally and professionally. A lot of what Rex wrote, obviously, was focused on Kentucky. I think it wasn't so much...
The state of Kentucky.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, because obviously we've got
to
look. In 2015, there were five states that had the highest death rates, I think, from opiate abuse.
Yeah.
And it's odd, Kentucky, Ohio, West Virginia, three contiguous states, and then like Vermont and Massachusetts, two contiguous states, or New Hampshire, whichever one's closest to Massachusetts. It just seems weird where they are. But a lot of what Rex wrote was about the government and what the government needs to do to help this or to curb this or to fix this. And I will say one thing is more rehabs. Whether that's government or private, I guess that's a political thing, but there has to be more access to rehabs. There need to be more. And this is another interesting thing, because Rex came on and talked about Suboxone. Suboxone is a drug that helps you.
Right.
It deadens the effects of opiates. So you can take them all you want, but you don't feel the effects of them. So you eventually don't take them.
A little bit like methadone.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have to have a clinic, and clinics can only have so many patients at a time. And so, but what's interesting is Rex got addicted to Suboxone.
Yeah.
Daryl said that was his savior. So it's a crazy world.
Everybody's
crazy.
Different.
Everybody is different. And it's just, But bottom line, I just felt like I needed to do it, and hopefully someone will get some help from me.
We'll take a break, come back, and talk a little bit more about this. I want to ask Cameron about his the problems he faced as it related to him being a former athlete. Back in just a minute. Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. Dick Gabriel with you on a Wednesday edition of our show. We're chatting with Cameron Mills right now about the conversation he had with Rex Chapman and Rex's battle with drug addiction. That was on the Mills Show on Sunday night. You can still hear it if you missed it on...
Go to CameronMillsRadio.com, and right. You can subscribe to the podcast via, I think, Google Play, iTunes, certainly, and you can press play right there on the website and listen to it.
And a little bit later on, after our next break, we're going to talk more about the one-and-done rule and the comments the SEC coaches throughout the league have
things
made this week.
Things that really matter.
That's exactly
yes,
right.
Absolutely.
But what I was curious about, and again, if you're just joining us, Cameron talked to Rex about Rex's struggles, but Cameron also admitted to having struggles himself after he suffered a back injury and wound up leaning a little too heavily on pain pills. And again, I've been there, you know, toothaches, three knee surgeries, a terrible back injury. And when you start looking at your watch thinking, when can I take my
yes.
next one? You know, that kind of
yeah.
stuff. But anyhow, I didn't get to the level of physical illness that you did. I'm wondering, though, because when you were playing college basketball and you knew what it felt like to be in tremendous physical condition. Mm-hmm. You had to be.
Yeah.
And that's again, that's all relative.
I was told that day one of workouts freshman year, you will be in the greatest yeah. shape of your life. And I was.
And you were.
As a result.
And you were. So you kind of walked around feeling that way. And then after a while, that was just you. I mean, you knew you were in great shape.
For 4 years.
But for 4 years, that was normalcy to you.
Yeah.
All right. Now, I always ask this of athletes, for instance, guys who have, you know, knee injuries or whatever. It's like your body is betraying you. And so when you were dealing with this problem, having been to the mountaintop, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you are where everybody wants to be. Everybody who goes to the gym, weekend warriors, you know, and now your body is rebelling against you. How odd was that?
Here's what was odd. It wasn't so much. I don't remember thinking much about the idea of I was a Division I college athlete.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be, you know, well, I guess it would have been, it was 2009. So, you know, was that 10, 12 years later, I shouldn't be in this position.
Yeah.
What I remember thinking is I'm 35.
Mm.
I shouldn't be in this position.
Yeah.
I you know, and for some reason, the number 35 stands out in my head. So at 35, I shouldn't be. I remember saying this to my doctor and saying this to my parents. At 35, I shouldn't be having, and this is a result of yeah, the injury, not the addiction issue.
Right.
This is I shouldn't feel like this at 35.
This is an old man injury.
Yeah, that's why I was trying to steer away from throwing a number. But what I would say is I shouldn't be dealing with the problems the 70-year-old faces.
Right.
That's what I would say constantly. And that
the injury doesn't know how old you are.
No,
I was 40 when I hurt my back.
Yeah, and you know the reality is if I had done it, doing something noble or exciting or.
If you had a better
awesome.
Story to tell.
If I had, yeah, if I had done this dunking on Jeff Shepard at the Seton Center in 1997, I would probably have come out sooner with the story. Maybe I think, and I don't know when I did it. I think I did it lifting a television as we were moving. I think
really?
I lifted. I think that's because I don't.
You got to make up something better than that.
Well, I know it's lame, isn't it?
Yeah,
but that's what I remember.
I fell at the Lexington Ice Center trying to keep my son from running over a little old lady on skate.
That sounds very noble.
Well, I'd like to think.
I mean,
it
could be better.
Yeah, oh, there's no
yeah,
question.
But you know, you've been saving
truth
the old lady,
the matter
and
was,
you went after your young son.
He probably wouldn't hit her anyway.
Well,
and the next thing I know, I fall on my hip, not my head, which I wish I'd done, or my rear end. I fall on my hip, and the next thing you know, it's chiropractors and pain pills and you know and injections that don't
yes.
have surgery. But
well, my biggest problem was that led to not the biggest problem. Obviously, that was the addiction, but the depression because of that. So I was on all kinds of medicine. I was on antidepressants.
Oh, wow.
I was on opiates. I was on.
That's something that people never think about.
No, that really.
All right, we'll take a break, come back, and talk about SEC basketball one and dones. It's been in the news. You might get tired of hearing about it, but it might be up for change within the NBA. We're back in just a minute here on 630 WLAP. You wanted a little postscript on what we were talking about?
Just wanted to add a big thank you to Rex and Daryl on my show because – they're the ones, honestly, Rex, to a large degree, motivated me when I knew I needed to share it at some point. But his honesty, Daryl's honesty, their humility, I keep tweeting about this. It, Rex even said that, you know, he was the macho of the macho when he played, which I think was his way of saying I was really arrogant. And then he just, he talked a lot about humility, and I really appreciated both of them, because, look, it was scary enough for me to come on and admit what I had to admit, and for them to come on and admit their stories, I mean, that was amazing to me. So I wanted to be careful about how I told my story, because I didn't want to take any thunder away from theirs, or I didn't want to be a hanger-on, but I just felt like it was the right time to do. So that's why I did it. But their stories are just amazing, and they're both in recovery now, like I am. So it so far has happy endings for all of us.
Yep. And again, we urge people to go to CameronMillsRadio.com if you'd like to hear it. Earlier in the show, we talked about, Curtis and I did, about the comments made not by John Calipari so much, although we touched on that as well, but other SEC coaches earlier this week on the SEC teleconference. And there was a big thing in the paper about Calipari's comments as well. And I suspect on Sunday we'll read in the big Tipton's column, you know, about some of the other SEC coaches and their comments. But for the most part, and again, Cameron, you're a big NBA fan, not huge on college ball other than your Wildcats.
Well, as far as watching it.
Watching it,
or being a fan of it, yeah. I'd rather watch it.
But, you know, nobody likes the one-and-done rule for the most part. The coaches now say they'd be okay with the equivalent of the baseball rule, which is you can go out of high school, but if you commit, you commit for more than 1 year to college. Most people say they'd rather see two. The baseball rule is three. Now, some of the addendums there are if you're a junior college guy in baseball, you can go, you can be drafted right out of junior college. If you're a JUCO guy, you can be drafted two, three, four times, something like that. You know, if you're redshirted and all that stuff. But bottom line is there are more options for baseball. What did you think of Bruce Pearl's comments about his concerns about kids going to the G League in lieu of the big league and not making it there, and now they have no options because perhaps they can't afford it to go to college?
One thing that he said, he talked about how, I guess, the one and done, or maybe the college coaches, he kind of gave credit to themselves as we've kind of made it so, maybe because of the clearinghouse, that, you know, we're making sure these kids are getting their high school education.
And he gave credit to the parents, too.
Right. Yeah. They're going in and making sure that their kids are taking Algebra 1.
Because they have to go to college.
Right.
And to back up just a little bit, one of the big problems was, evidently, back in the day when kids could go out of high school, coaches would run into kids who had no intention of even trying college ball. I don't need grades. I don't need school. Yeah. I'm going right
even
to
in
the
high
league.
Yes. Right. Yeah. And I get that as a problem.
Yeah.
But
it's a huge problem.
And this may not even be at all what Bruce Pearl was touching on. But the one thing that bothered me about his comment that stood out to me, though, was he kind of gave the coaches credit for helping along the education. That may be the case for some of them. That may be the case for a large portion of them. I'll just tell you this. Our classes that we took, we were encouraged to take classes that did not conflict with our basketball schedule. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if education was truly so important, the way we always talk about it, it's the most important thing to these coaches, then that wouldn't really happen. And I get it. We got to have practice at some point. You got to have the whole team there. But that just kind of rang hollow to me that Bruce Pearl was talking about, even though I do love Coach Pearl. Look, here's how I feel. I don't think there ought to be any limitation whatsoever on anybody when they're ready and the NBA says you're ready, you're good enough, come on. Otherwise, we're limiting their opportunity to make a living at what they are capable of making a living at. I realize there are scary issues. If they go, they hurt themselves, they don't have that degree to fall back on, maybe they can't, and there probably need to be some answers to that. But if you're ready at 18 to go, then you ought to be able to go. I don't think there should be a one and done rule. I think there should be.
You like
zero.
The baseball rule?
I do, to some degree, but then my problem with the baseball rule is now you come back to a limitation again, and it's more so than one and done, because you can go, but if you stay,
it's 2 years.
It's 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay, but again, that gets us back into the injuries, that gets us back into the all kinds of things.
And the fact that you can buy insurance, that doesn't hold much sway.
No, I mean, you can buy insurance, and I guess in some cases the schools are buying insurance. Is that even legal?
They can help somehow.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
that's changed.
Yeah, I
which it should have.
Well, I if you can go play, go play. If you can make a living, go make a living. And the one thing, again, I go back to, I think what I heard Coach Pearl say is about, you know, his problem with going to the G League, which is the D League, right?
Yeah.
That's the Gator. Is it
Gator? Sponsored by Gator.
There we go. Well, we knew that was coming.
Right.
Is that he mentioned something about their contract's only $75,000?
$75,000 to $100,000. Kids are going from $75,000 to $100,000
a year?
Only.
Yeah. What does he think graduates are making fresh out of, with a degree from UK?
Yeah.
They're making half that if they're lucky. So
maybe he meant that's all they get total.
Well, right? I don't know.
And they stay in the G League.
I don't know that I know what a G League contract is, but they're making a living playing basketball.
Not much.
Well, none of us make much.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I realize it's not comparable to what Russell Westbrook probably deserves on his next contract. But at the same time, it's an opportunity to make a living. We keep falling back on this word education. Education does not mean you've got a piece of paper from a university that says you've followed our curriculum and we award you that. That's not an education.
Right.
That's a degree. Education is I have a skill that is needed out there in the private sector, whatever. I have a skill, and you need my skill.
Right.
So why in this country and do you have to follow this? Because where are the trade schools? Where are the skills?
They're out there.
They're not anymore. If they are, we're not encouraging kids to go there. I mean, we're not
in the world that we are discussing.
That's
right
what I'm
now.
Saying. But you see, okay, when was the last time you heard anyone say to a kid, when they say you need your education, what they meant was you need to learn how to weld.
I'm not going to hear that in this walk of life. I'm sure that is said. No, I'm sure it's said. And I know there. Look, college is not for everybody. I get that. Guys I went to school with freshman year lived in my dorm. Dropped
out. Not for a lot of them.
Dropped out and went to work doing, you know, construction and things. Now, this was in the early 70s when, you know, the economy hadn't crashed yet and all that stuff. But to your point about degrees, yeah, you know, I get what you're saying. You're right. And you know, there are people, you know, I cannot go and teach a college class at UK right now in media, in journalism, in anything.
Why
in
not?
Telecom, because I don't have a master's.
That's insanity to me. You've got 20, what? No, I'm saying 30. I go by your 25 years.
Yeah.
You've got 30 years of doing journalism, media,
all of it,
television, radio, writing. I mean, and you can't go tell kids, this is what I did, this is how I did it.
And
now,
and this is how you do it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
One
See, I guess I'm looking at
it
the way I would
no,
say
I
this is how
saying,
I did it, but you are certainly qualified
well,
to say this.
Here's
is how
the
you
other
do
thing
it.
That bothers me about this as well. And you were a walk on. So mom and dad had to.
2 years.
You know,
paid
had to
for
play
2 years.
2 years, yeah. Me being from a single parent home, I had to find a way to pay my bills, which is fine. Doesn't make me any better than anybody. But there's this notion that, and in some cases I realize this is the case. If a kid doesn't have a college scholarship, he can't go to college, he or she, which, as I said, in some walks of life, that's an absolute fact. All right. But in a lot of other walks of life, let's say you try the G League, you reach for the NBA, you don't make it. That doesn't mean you can't go to college.
There's help out there.
There are grants out there. And there are people out there willing to help you.
Yes. And that's the other thing is that.
Now, if not to interrupt you.
No, you're fine. I do it to you all the time.
That's true. But if people like Bruce Pearl and John Calipari don't have time to help people like that, I get it. That's not their job.
Yeah, no.
But there are people out there who can help them.
Well, and you said it, there are grants, there are loans, and again, I didn't have to take a loan. I had a dad who had a job and was able to pay my tuition. It was in state at the time. It wasn't outrageous.
That's right.
Maybe
Same
it's more
here.
Outrageous now.
Yeah.
But see, that's kind of to my point. Is it?
Well, I couldn't afford my own bill now.
See that? Okay. Why is it so much more expensive? I get it that, you know, a dollar is worth more now, or maybe I'm looking at it backwards than it was in 1994 when I went to UK.
Yeah.
Okay, a tuition at Yale would be ridiculous.
Right.
Tuition at UK, you're still getting an education. And I realize that a Yale degree may look better than a UK degree, but at the same time, no one ever really refers to that in most of the places that you're going to be employed. Now, maybe I'm overlooking if you go to Yale, you go to law school, they are looking at that. Okay, my world, I got a degree in psychology. I took those classes because they interested me, and I knew I could do well in them because they interested me.
Right.
I knew what I was going to do after college. Now, that may be of a
benefit. Was that your ministry work all along?
Yeah. That was always my plan. Now, what that looked like, I wasn't sure before college, but I knew that's what I felt called to do. And then everything else that I've done.
Did your work toward that degree ever help you in any way?
No. What, in psychology?
Yes, toward your ministry work.
I think one of the reasons I think I also took psychology is I was thinking I'd get some counseling skills, but when you just get a BA in psychology, you're taking like,
introductory.
I think the most I took a 600 level class, which might have been a master's level, but I took it because, you know, it was one of those electives I needed, and it was like, it was going to be interesting because I remember we were going to operate on rats. It was one of those like where we actually did brain surgery on rats.
Really?
Yeah. And we effectively.
So if somebody ever says to you, it's not brain surgery, you could say, I got this.
No. Well, on rats.
You don't have to add that part.
No, I know, but no, and I think we killed the first one we did it on. So, yeah.
In the name of science.
That was the thing. We were actually helping UK produce a paper or an experiment of some sort. So, but I don't think, see, that's the thing. If I can't pinpoint, yes, if I did not have this degree, I wouldn't be able to be doing what I'm doing. For two reasons. Number one, if I can't pinpoint it, then how valuable is it really? And I know that's offensive to a lot of people out there. But here's the other thing. You know, and a lot of people know now, I didn't have my degree until 2010. And that's the other thing that would bother me. I would have people come up to me, because I never lie. They'd come up and they'd say, well, maybe I did once or twice, but they'd come up and say, what year did you graduate? I don't remember. And I would say, well, my last year playing was 1998, because I didn't want to lie.
Right, right.
And then occasionally, for whatever reason, I'd say, actually, I've not graduated yet. I remember distinctly having some elderly people in a very well-meaning way say, son, that's disappointing. You need your education. And I stopped him and I said, sir, I have 147 hours passed at the University of Kentucky. I need 140 to graduate from the University of Kentucky. I've just got the wrong extra ones.
That's right.
So now, you tell me how I don't have my degree.
Right.
I don't have my education.
I'm going up against the break. I will say this now. You and I have talked about this kind of stuff for a long time, and I will say this. I majored in journalism, and it clearly helped me. Well, I won't say clearly. I can assure you that it helped me in the field that I wanted to get into, and that ultimately, even though I majored, I was going to be a sports writer. I end up in sports broadcasting, but writing, press law, things like but even the non-journalism type courses I took, all that stuff, you know, helps you in learning to think, learning to being exposed to other things. All there is value in all of that. And getting back to what we were talking about, I do hope that these coaches who talk a lot about education sort of take that under advisement when they're discussing and debating these sorts of things about changing the rules and really looking after kids, because looking after kids isn't just making sure that they get generational wealth, right?
Sure, or that they get a piece of paper from a university that says you're educated now.
Well, and getting that piece of paper sends them a lot much farther than going a couple of years and dropping out and trying to find your way.
It might. In most cases, it probably does. But in some instances, I would say, and I don't know that I'd argue this, but I'd just say they go another direction. They wind up making a lot more than you and I will ever make because they happen to find their calling.
Maybe and maybe not.
And see,
but what I always enjoy, though, talking to athletes who tell me, you know, when I came to college, didn't care about school. It was like the kid from Ohio State, the football player. Why do I even have to go to class? I came here to play football. And when he got his degree, he said it was the happiest day of his life because he realized what he'd accomplished.
Okay, but what he'd accomplished, that he accomplished 4 years of direction towards something. What did he mean by that, though? Because that's what I would immediately ask. Was he proud that he had this?
Yes.
That he'd accomplished something?
Both.
It's the scene in Good Will Hunting, right? I went to the library today. The same education you get from these professors, it's available for free. There's actually a website out there, and I wish I knew the name of it offhand, that's offering college courses
and
lectures
online
for free.
And everybody could soak in the knowledge without help from professors the way Matt Damon's character did,
You're right. Go ahead.
I mean, he's right.
No, I know, but But did you hear what I said? There's a website out there, and with the last segment, I'll try to find it, and because we got one more segment, right?
Yep.
I'll try to find it and tell you what it is. But it's actual college courses streamed online for free.
Oh, yeah.
Those are professors that are streaming out that information. They're lectures.
That's good.
That's an education. Just go get it.
I will tell you this as well. You have no excuse for not writing a great novel, because every word you need is in a dictionary, and you can find a dictionary online. And with that.
Oh, my God.
Back in a minute, 630 WLAP. Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider, final segment of our program, Dick Gabriel. Cameron Mills, I did want to ask you this before we get off on the topic of education, bringing it back to basketball. I have a feeling I know the answer, but a guy who, I can't even remember his name, covers the NBA for WFAN Radio up in New York, he scoffed and mocked the notion that was forwarded by De'Aaron Fox that he and his Kentucky teammates were brothers. And this guy said something to the effect that they aren't even together for a year, you know, or maybe if they'd been together for more than a year, he might buy that.
So at what point, by definition, do you become brothers, according to him? When's the month cutoff? Is it 5 months,
That's
6 months? Is it
question.
1 year? Is it 365 days? No, it's what
you got to get back to him on that.
It's what you go through together. And that can happen. And I think I quote tweeted this guy because what he said bothered me, because it was just a veiled smack
That's
at Cal.
That's right. You did quote tweet him. Yeah.
It was a veiled attempt to smack down Cal, because Cal always talks about La Familia, right?
Right.
And so he talks about these are his sons. And that might get tedious to some people, but I'm sure he means it sincerely, because they are dear to him.
Yep.
Okay. You do become brothers. And it happens actually even less than 5 months or 6 months, because the moment coach yells at you, and you're all, you and I even talked about this in Making the Team, is that that thing of we're all in this together against coach, because coach is being mean, right?
Right.
And so you instantly become brothers. And
you guys swap stories about, he said this to you, he said this to me. Cam, I can't believe he said that to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that would, look, it happens. If this guy's never been on a team and never, then, but I don't think it. The moment you face adversity.
Being on a team is one thing. Going through something is another.
I was on a lot of teams
playing baseball. I never felt like guys were my brothers.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we never had a coach screaming at us.
And I think the one thing I was thinking is that, okay, what did these guys face? And maybe I even mentioned this in my tweet as well. They faced constant criticism from everyone. And that was the thing. That's what you face. You face adversity from your coach pushing you. And then now you've got constant criticism from even your own fans, the opposing fans. They all have access to you on Twitter and Facebook. And then you've got the media telling you you're wrong. You've got this guy up here saying, how dare you call yourselves brothers? Yeah, it was just utter nonsense.
Made you crazy.
And that actually did. Because I don't think he didn't understand.
Yeah.
So he mocked it.
Thank you for your time, sir. Appreciate it.
Yep.
CameronMillsRadio.com if you'd like to hear that last Sunday show. And check them out this Sunday night as well. We thank you for being with us. Back tomorrow night with Mitch Barnhart and Kyle Tucker for Curtis Brooks to Gabriel. That's it. Good night from Lexington.
The sea was angry that day, my friends. Like an old man trying to send back soup in a deli.